प्रेम से कहो श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव श्री गौर भक्त वृंद की जय। श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण गोप गोपीनाथ श्याम कुंद राधा कुंद गिरी गोवर्धन की जय। वृंदावन धाम की जय। मायापुर धाम की जय। गंगा माई यमुना माई की जय। हरि नाम संकीर्तन यज्ञ की जय। गौर प्रेमानंदी हरि हरि बोल। ओ गौर समलिवोती सो गौर समलिवोती ओ गौर समलिवोती ओ गौरी सो गौरी श्री श्री गुरु एंड गौरंगम। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So we are reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 12, Chapter 2, Text Number 3. Dampatye biruchir hetur Maya iva vyavharike Stritve pumstve chahiratir Vipratve sutram evahim Dampatye biruchir hetur Mayaiva vyaharike Stritve pumstve chahiratir Vipratve sutramevahim Dampatye biruchir hetur Mayaiva vyaharike Stritve pumstve chahiratir Vipratve sutram evahim Dampatye viruchi hetu Mayaiva vyaharike Stritve pumstve
Thank you.
Dampatyem. In the relationship of husband and wife. Abhiruchi. Superficial attraction. Hetu. The reason. Maya. Deceit. Eva. Indeed. Vyavaharike. In business. Stritve. In being a woman. Pumstve. In being a man. Cham. And. He. Indeed. Rati. Sex. Vipratve. In being a Brahmana. Sutram. The secret thread. Eva. Only. He. Indeed. Translation and purport. Men and women will live together merely because of superficial attraction, and sex in, and success in business will depend on deceit. Womanless and manless will be judged according to one's expertise in sex, and a man will be known as a Brahmana just by his wearing a thread. Purport. Just as a human life as a whole has a great and serious purpose, namely spiritual liberation, fundamental human institutions such as marriage and child rearing should also be dedicated to that great objective. Unfortunately, in the present age, the satisfaction of sex impulse has become the overriding, if not the exclusive reason for marriage. The sex impulse, which induces the male and female of almost every species to combine physically and in higher species also emotionally, is ultimately not a natural urge because it is based on the unnatural identification of the self with the body. Life itself is a spiritual phenomenon. It is the soul that lives and gives apparent life to the biological machine called the body. Consciousness is the soul's manifest energy, and thus consciousness, awareness itself, is originally an entirely spiritual event. When life or consciousness is confined within a biological machine and falsely mistakes itself to be that machine, material existence occurs and sex desire arises. God intends human life to be an opportunity for us to rectify this illusory mode of existence and return to the vast satisfaction of pure godly existence. But because of our identification with the material body is a long historical affair, it is difficult for most people to immediately break free from demands of the material, of the materially molded mind. Therefore, the Vedic scriptures prescribe sacred marriage, in which a so-called man and so-called woman may combine in a regulated spiritual marriage sheltered by overreaching religious injunctions. In this way, the candidate for self-realization who has selected family life can derive adequate satisfaction for his senses and simultaneously please the Lord within his heart by obeying religious injunctions. The Lord then purifies him of material desire. So we'll discuss a little bit the points in this first part, and then we'll continue further. Dampatye biruchir hetur maya eva vyaharike stritve pumstve chahiratir vipratve sutram evaki. Man and woman will live together merely because of superficial attraction, and success in business will depend on deceit. Womanless and manless will be judged according to one's expertise in sex, and man will be known as a Brahmana just by his wearing a thread. Om Jnanati Mirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Mulitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyacha Kripa Sinubhe Vacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrindam Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare. So we have a wonderful description of the symptoms of Kali Yuga. And as I was reading this chapter and the chapter prior to this one, one thing kind of struck my attention. If you recall, in the previous chapter, there is a description of all the dynasties and kings that were ruling in the beginning of Kali Yuga. And it's amazing how Bhagavatam exactly points a specific time. It says this dynasty of kings will rule for 100 years, and this dynasty of kings will rule for 300 years, and so on. It goes like that. And I was just thinking, like, how amazing it is that in this material world, no matter who we are, every living entity thinks, I will be ruling forever. I will be the king, I will be so-and-so forever. But Krishna says in Gita, I am the time, I am the all-powerful time force that basically changes everything. And even though these great kings and dynasties were so powerful with so much force and army and prestige and influence, the time just wipes them out and they're gone in the history. So it's always essential to view things from the right perspective. What is our position in this material world? We are eternal living beings, but unfortunately we are entangled in this material energy, life after life, and unless we utilize the opportunity that we have right now, we are kind of missing the great, great opportunity. So as we read in this particular verse, it's described the symptoms of Kali Yuga. And as Mother Madhumati said yesterday, sometimes if you read this, it can get you depressed. You know, it's just like the symptoms are, and Bhagavatam is very, very sharp, you know, in its description. And sometimes it's so intense that we may think, oh, what is the hope? You know, the Kali Yuga is so powerful, and what a chance of you know, insignificant jiva to fight this negative influence. However, if we think about the symptoms, what are the symptoms meant for, and why are even the acharyas bringing this up in Bhagavatam? Srila Shukadeva Goswami definitely wouldn't even mention this if it's not crucial and essential for our own benefit. If you approach expert doctor like Radhakrishna Prabhu and you tell him, Prabhu, I'm not feeling good, he's going to ask you, okay, what are your symptoms? And then you say, oh, my head hurts, you know, I have fever last night and this and that and this. Then he will point out, okay, you need to take this medicine and you need to treat it this way and you need to apply it in such way, and then you will feel better. So in the same way, acharyas, they basically teach us, they tell us, okay, these are the symptoms of the age of Kali. So first of all, if you want to be cured, you have to know how to recognize the symptoms of diseased condition. Secondly, if you want to live happy and prosperous life, then you need to apply medicine properly. So therefore we have these descriptions, and they are very, very important for us. Now, speaking about, particularly about relationship between men and women. On one side, it's basically described here how that superficial attraction could be such a binding force in this material world. But on the other hand, there is a positive side. There is always two sides to anything. Good side, bad side. So, in this particular description, we see the negative side. But if we go back to the third canto, there is a wonderful discussion between Vidura and Maitreya Rishi. And in that conversation, basically, Vidura inquires about the dynasty of Svayambhuva Manu. And Prabhupada comments in the purport, Vidura didn't just inquire about the dynasty of Svayambhuva Manu just to, you know what, like, you know, lineage was there, or, you know, how they were living prosperous material life. No, there was just, there was deeper meaning behind his questions. So, we find in that particular conversation, there is a description of the marriage between Kardama Muni and Devahuti. And there is many wonderful instructions in that particular chapter, which I would kind of like to refer to a little bit. So what exactly happened? Basically, as we know, Kardama Muni was a great, great yogi. And not just a yogi in the material sense, but he was also great, great Vaishnava, great devotee. He meditated for 10,000 years. Can you imagine that? 10,000 years. And finally, he had the darshan of Lord Vishnu. When the Lord appeared, Kardama Muni offered the prayers, and he was so happy to actually have a darshan of the Lord. And then he basically, after offering the prayers, he expressed his mind and the desire to marry. Now you may think, like, why would somebody after 10,000 years want to get married? But why not? He was Prajapati, that was his service, and why not? The marriage is not necessarily negative if it's properly utilized for the spiritual realization. So Lord Vishnu, he said, I only know you because he's the Supreme Lord. He knows the heart and mind of all of us. So the Lord, he replied, I only made the arrangement for you because you're my devotee. I only actually made the arrangement for you. In a day or two, Svayambhuva Manu will arrive and he will bring his beautiful daughter, which is a perfect match for you. Now, interesting thing which I forgot to mention, when Kardama Muni was asking the Lord for the, when he was expressing his desire to marry, he actually specifically said, I wish to find, trying to find the exact words here. Oh, here we are. Therefore, desiring to marry a girl of like disposition who may prove to be vertebral cow of plenty in my married life to satisfy my lustful desire, I too have sought the shelter of your lotus feet, which are the source of everything, for you are like a desired tree. Now, important thing in this verse, Prabhupada explains, is he was looking for the girl of like disposition. In other words, he was looking for a person that will be similar in his qualities. And Prabhupada explains how nowadays marriage takes place without such consultation, and therefore, soon after the marriage, there is a divorce and separation. Formerly, husband and wife used to live together peacefully throughout their whole lives, but nowadays it is a very difficult task. So, Prabhupada was mentioning the importance of doing the astrological calculation and basically comparing the qualities of the boy and girl before they're married, so that the match would be proper and that both of them would be capable of progressing further in the spiritual life. So, after the Lord departed, sure enough, within their tomb, Svayambhuva Manu appeared, and it's described that he basically he arrived with his wife and daughter. He didn't send his agent, or you know, he could send anybody, his ministers, to basically arrange that, but he personally took the charge. Prabhupada explains how it's actually duty of the parents to arrange that, not that the girl would be seeking out on her own necessarily. So now it's also interesting to point out Devahuti, she never saw Kadama Muni. She never saw him, not on the Facebook or Instagram or anything like that. So, but she heard from Narada Muni about his great, great qualities. So, and because of that information, she developed attraction and affection for Kadama Muni. And it's described that she was so beautiful. One time there was a Gandharva, Vishwavasu, flying over the kingdom of Svayambhuva Manu. And as it was custom for the royal families, they had the big palaces, and it's described that only like royal members of the family, they would be playing in the gardens, in the fields. So at that point, Devahuti, she was playing with the ball on the roof of the palace. And when this Vishwavasu, when he saw how beautiful she was, he fell from his airplane. Can you imagine that? He was so bewildered with her beauty that he actually fell off the airplane. Amazing. So anyhow, the story goes on. Svayambhuva Manu arrives to the hermitage of Kadama Muni. Now, if you compare Kadama Muni's residence with the residence where Devahuti grew up, you would see it's a huge difference. Like, first of all, Kadama Muni, he is a yogi living in a jungle. Like, there is no furniture around. There is no, you know, there's no all the facilities for the comfortable life. But meanwhile, Devahuti, she's coming from such opulence. She had maid servants and great, you know, palace to live and wonderful facilities. But nevertheless, she was willing to marry Kadama Muni because of his spiritual qualities. So, as we know, basically, the story goes on. Devahuti, she was very, 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 very humble in her serving attitude to her husband, and she served him for many, many years. It's described in Bhagavatam that even she was such a beautiful girl that her physical body actually became skinny, and her hair got matted, and she was just not looking the same anymore. So after many, many years, basically at one point Kadama Muni, he out of his affection, he addressed her and offered his blessings. It's not like she was complaining and, oh Prabhu, like, you know, I have no furniture here, like what's going on? No, there was no complaining at all. But at one point Kadama Muni offered her blessings, and then she reminded him that she would actually would like to have a children, which is normal. So anyhow, Kadama Muni, he was so powerful that just by his yogic powers, he was able to create a flying palace. You know, not just, you know, like a regular house, but palace, it's described, it was like 7-story high. And each story had like beautiful apartments and rooms with amazing decorations, and the palace itself had beautiful gardens and waterfalls and beautiful birds flying around. So just imagine the scenery. It's incredible opulence. And he was able to create it simply by his yogic powers. So basically they were at that point, you know, going on a vacation. They were traveling freely throughout the universe. And after traveling and enjoying like that for, it's described 100 years, which passed very quickly, they returned back to the hermitage of Kardama Muni. And the point I'm trying to get is, towards the end, there's a couple of verses which Devahuti speaks, which are very, very profound and very, very essential. And we can learn a lot ourselves from her comments which she's saying to her husband here. So I would just like to share this with you. So basically, the time comes when Kardama Muni is ready to leave and take sannyas, and Devahuti is addressing him. So she's saying, when she saw her husband about to leave home, she smiled externally, but at heart she was agitated and distressed. She, Devahuti, said, "My lord, you have fulfilled all the promises you gave me, yet because I'm your surrendered soul, you should give me fearlessness too. My dear Brahmana, as far as your daughters are concerned, they will find their own suitable husbands and go away to their respective homes. But who will give me solace after your departure as a sannyasi? Until now, we have simply wasted so much our time in sense gratification, neglecting to cultivate knowledge of the Supreme Lord. Not knowing your transcendental situation, I have loved you while remaining attached to the objects of the senses. Nonetheless, let the affinity I have developed for you rid me of all fear." And then one really important verse here. She's saying, "Association for sense gratification is certainly the path of bondage, but the same type of association performed with a sainted person leads to the path of liberation, even if performed without knowledge. Anyone whose work is not meant to elevate him to religious life, anyone whose religious ritualistic performances do not raise him to renunciation, and anyone situated in renunciation that does not lead him to devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead must be considered dead, although he is breathing." So from these verses, we can actually understand how intelligent she was. So intelligent that she wanted the last boon from her husband, which is fearlessness. And how can one become fearless? Only by becoming totally self-realized. Because the fear, which is originally coming from the fear of death, is all-pervading. So to overcome that, one has to become pure devotee and come to the point of self-realization. So, as we know, the story goes on. Kardama Muni then informed her that actually the Supreme Lord will appear as her own child. And as we know, who that is? Does anybody know? Who is the famous son, Gauranga Prabhu? That's right, Kapila Dev. And then Kapila Dev will speak so many wonderful instructions. Later on, there is all this description there. So anyhow, now I can guess that some people may say, "Oh, Govinda Das, why are you bringing this up? This was Satya Yuga, and we live in Kali Yuga." And I would say, yeah, I agree. And some ladies may say, "Where is the man like Kardama Muni, who is so powerful that, you know, he can have a flying palace?" You know, that the palace was so incredible that anything you desire is immediately fulfilled. Like, you desire your dishes to be washed, done. you desire like laundry done, you desire like lunch, everything done. So just imagine to have a house like that. And furniture, it's like beautiful, you know, not just IKEA furniture, but like amazing, amazing decorations. So the ladies may think, where is a husband like that, you know, in Kali Yuga? And the men may say, oh, where is a girl like Devahuti that's so beautiful? It says like her, even her toenails were so pretty. They were like diamonds, like shining diamonds. Like, where is the girl like that? The men may say that. So the point is, of course, there is, you know, nobody can imitate that. You know, we that's right, we are not in Satya Yuga. But that does not mean that we cannot treat each other in a way they treated themselves, with respect and with love. Basically, if a woman thinks, oh, I loved that man when he was rich, but now, you know, not so much wealth, you know, why should I serve him now anymore? Or if the man thinks, oh, I loved that girl when she was young and pretty, but now maybe a little bit overweight and, you know, wrinkles on their eyes. And so that is not really what the Krishna consciousness is about. So Prabhupada actually wrote so many wonderful purports to educate us that the human life has a higher meaning. And regardless which ashram we live, brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas, they all have a particular purpose to be fulfilled, certain duties to be fulfilled. So just like anything meaningful in life that we desire, that we are willing to achieve, requires sacrifice. So in the same way, even in a marriage, there is a need for sacrifice. The wife may have to tolerate, okay, yeah, he can only afford IKEA furniture, and he sometimes snores, but it's okay, he still has so many devotional qualities, so I love him. And the man may think, okay, my wife is, you know, not always, you know, making chapatis and, you know, five different subjects for me, you know, sometimes I just have to be happy with a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, and that's what to do. But my wife is wonderful Vaishnavi, and she should be treated as a princess, and she should be loved in such a way. So that is the culture that we are trying to establish. That is the culture that Srila Prabhupada wanted us to basically implement in our society. So that one day people all over the Florida will come and you know, when they meet Divyanga Prabhu in Orlando, and they say, oh, I heard about that community where everybody is so blissful. I heard it on NPR. There is amazing people living there. Let me come and see. Let me actually take your book and let me read what's this all about. So if we only give people books, but they have no place to come and see it, then we are really not doing our job 100%. We have to give people books, but we also have to have perfect society so that when people come, they can actually see the Vedic culture in its real time and form. So I know we are running out of time. There's always so much to say. I will just summarize. Basically, this particular verse, in addition to this point, it's also mentioning how in the age of Kali, the Brahmana will be only known by the wearing of the thread, not necessarily by his qualities. And I found a couple interesting points in that regard, which I would like to share with you. So back in 1974, Srila Prabhupada wrote a letter to Tamal Krishna Maharaj, and he said, basically, he was saying, it is very good that you have purchased a third bus. I'm assuming he was referring to the Radha Damodar party, which was active at that time. And Prabhupada is saying, So it is very good that you have purchased the third bus and also that you are rotating the men. This is a good idea. Yes, train up the Brahmanas very carefully. Many Indians and foreigners criticize us now, how we can create Brahmanas. They are under the impression that Brahmanas are born like horses and asses are born. According to Bhagavad Gita, Brahmanas are according to guna and karma. So the training of Brahmanas should be so nice that people will be forced to accept them as the Brahmanas by guna, quality and karma and action. So Prabhupada was saying, basically he was emphasizing the importance of training our devotees to possess these qualities. Because as we know, people, especially people from the traditional background in India, they were very critical. Why do Westerners have to be given Brahmanic initiation, since they are not Brahmin, they are not born in the Brahmanic families? But Prabhupada explained that it is not dependent on the birth, rather than it's dependent on the qualities. Then I also found one nice letter from 1976, January 6, 1976. And in this particular letter, Srila Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he's writing to all the GBC members. And he's stating as follows here. He's saying, His Divine Grace therefore wishes to institute examinations to be given to all prospective candidates for sannyas and brahmana initiation. In addition, he wishes that all present sannyasis and brahmanas also pass the examination. Awarding of these titles will be based upon the following books. And then he goes on Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Vaibhava, Bhaktivedanta. So there's different books that have to be studied, and then any candidate for second initiation will be tested based on those scriptures. So kind of running late. I think I will stop here. I know there is always a lot to be said, but I'm not going to hold you back. If anybody would like to comment or question or any critics, please do so. Yes, Madhumati. Madhumati.
When I saw the verse and I thought the kid, and I'm like, oh my God, what is Govinda Prabhu going to do? Such an excellent class. I just really wanted to say it's really an excellent class. I really appreciated one point that you made there, was that even though we may not be, you know, like Kadvamuni or Devahuti, but we can still treat each other with respect. I thought that was a very, very valuable point that you made there. Appreciated that. And just for information-wise, you were talking about Prabhupada desiring about the Bhakti Shastri, and I just heard that the first Bhakti Vaibhav graduation happened in Mayapur just now. So.
Thank you for. Sharing that. Yeah, I think especially as our society continues decade after decade, I think it will become crucial that indeed, like you said, that we are examining ourselves based on the particular scriptures for either Bhakti Shastri or Bhakti Vaibhava, or you know, depending on each particular devotee's position. In that letter that, where did I see that? I think it was in this letter from Tamal Krishna Maharaj. Basically, he was pointing out how our devotees were not reading proper books, and because of that, you know, we were, you know, at times not really exemplary in this sense of, you know, Brahmanical qualities. So it's really crucial that, you know, out of love for Srila Prabhupada, we really have to study his books and therefore be exemplary, you know, when people see us, especially in India. Yes, Prabhu.
I'm a bit amazed all the time when we come together according to Prabhupada's directions and hear these books, hear the Srimad Bhagavatam. It makes so much sense, and you can see the Kali Yuga, and you can see through the eyes of the Bhagavatam how much mercy we've been receiving, because it's, you can't imagine it, you know. So with, by Prabhupada's grace, following the order of his spiritual master and bringing these books to the Western world, now there's this information that's by contrast, like light and black and white, night and day, brilliant as the sun, Srimad Bhagavatam. And we're understanding it.
Yeah, that's why association of Vaishnava is so crucial, because we remind each other. I know myself, I'm guilty of not reading as much as I should be. But when I see other devotees and I see how wonderfully they are practicing their spiritual life, then immediately the desire comes in a heart. I should be reading more. I want to hear more about Krishna. I want to chant more. I want to become like this devotee. So Prabhupada created this society, and we are so grateful for doing that, for him doing that. Thank you so much. I think we will stop here. Garantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.